Today's episode is sponsored by Morgan Stanley. Just 30 years ago, renewable energy seemed futuristic. Now, it's a practical way to power cities. Morgan Stanley explores the economics driving the industry and what it means for investors. Hear the full podcast at morganstanley.com/podcast. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money, I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. This week we're asking, what's next for Facebook? And what should users know about how global media companies like Facebook are using their personal data? On March 17th, news broke that Cambridge Analytica, a voter profiling firm associated with the Trump campaign, harvested data from more than 50 million Facebook users. That Monday, Facebook's stock promptly tanked. It's down about 15% since its all-time high of $190 per share in February. But let's not shed a tear for Facebook shareholders quite yet. It's still been on a massive rocket ride since it went public at $38 a share in 2012. Still, more than a week into this scandal, privacy concerns about the company continue to dominate headlines, the stock has not recovered, and the hashtag #DeleteFacebook has been trending on social media. After 3 days of silence, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg responded with a CNN interview.
You know, we have a basic responsibility to protect people's data, and if we can't do that, then we don't deserve to have the opportunity to serve people.
One day after that, Facebook Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg spoke to CNBC.
We are now going back and we are going to investigate apps. And if we find anything, we're going to tell people that their data was potentially misused.
But there are still questions about how Facebook will protect users' data in the future and who should be regulating media companies like Facebook. We have two great guests on the show this week. David Kirkpatrick is author of The Facebook Effect, and he'll walk us through Facebook's business model. Is it still viable in the wake of all of these privacy concerns? Then we'll have Politico tech reporter Nancy Scola on to discuss the government's regulatory options. What really is on the table for Congress to regulate Facebook? First, let's jump into my conversation with David.
I'm frantically trying to eat a poppy seed cake because I have had no carbs or any calories for the last couple hours, but this will just take a second. I'm very pleased to be here, and thank you for asking me to join you for this.
So there is a ton to talk about with Facebook, lots of threads to pull in this big, complicated story, but I want to start with just a big existential question about the company. Given all that's happened over recent weeks with data privacy and the breach of so much privacy of so many Facebook users, do you think that Facebook's business model, where all of us give up all of our personal data to them for free and then they sell ads against that data, do you think the Facebook business model is long-term sustainable?
Depends on how long-term you mean. For the next 4 to 5 years, I think it'll be increasingly under threat because of this incident and others like it. But I think it's a great question because I would say I think it has to do with just the way that technology will evolve, and that Facebook essentially is a, you know, what, 14-year-old design that for all of its evolution is still founded on the ideas of basically 14 years ago. And so no, the answer is it will not survive long term. It will survive for the short term, partly because it's so profitable, they'll continue to find ways of making it acceptable for users, and advertisers really have no alternative as a place to go that is comparably targetable for their customer. And targetability is the holy grail of advertising, and Facebook is the most targetable medium in the history of marketing. Therefore, it will continue to succeed, at least in the short term.
And its sheer mass and size has raised the question over whether it's simply too big to manage, that it did blow up in such a short period of time. And Mark Zuckerberg was on CNN saying if you asked him in, you know, his dorm room whether a few years later he would be responsible for maintaining election integrity, he never would have believed it. It feels to me like this is such a massive enterprise with so many users that at some point it's become somewhat too big to manage. Do you think that's true?
Yes, probably. But I would say that same point could be made about Google and Amazon too. I think it's been proven even in the case of a much smaller company like Uber. I mean, when you get into a global marketplace with a fast-paced startup, with a move fast and break things mindset, it's very, very dangerous for the world, if not for the company. And I don't think that we really have a oversight model, a governance model for Google or Amazon any more than we do with Facebook. So I don't think we should single Facebook out in that respect. On the other hand, I think you can probably with sadness argue, and I have on a number of interviews I've done this week, that greed really entered into it in recent years, and that Facebook has been swimming in so much dough that they came to believe, you know, sort of breathe their own exhaust kind of thing, or live on their own fumes, or whatever bad metaphor you want. You know, they were more interested in growing their extraordinarily, unprecedentedly profitable business than they were in really sitting back and thinking, what does this really mean and what could go wrong? And you know, one of the smartest things I saw on Twitter this week, and there have been so many interesting things said about this crisis, but was that somebody wrote, if you were running a business like this, the main thing you should be asking yourself is, what would happen if the worst people got access to everything we have inside this? And if once we imagine that, how would we build protections to avoid that from happening? They clearly did not do that.
It is pretty incredible when you think about it that they didn't do that as it was growing so massively in size. And obviously they were in love with the profitability, $40 billion in advertising revenue last year, profit margins that are the envy of any business in the world.
Any company, they have net margins of over 25%. They're going to have net profits this year of well over $20 billion.
Yeah, we should stop to listeners and just say that profit margin is an insane number.
They're probably the most profitable company of their size that has ever existed.
Right. So let's drill down into that for a second. The fact that they exploded in the number of users and in the profitability per user, over the 14-year period since Mark Zuckerberg conceived of this thing. And at the same time, these app developers were able to plug into the platform, and until you can correct me on the precise time when they changed this, but could get into the platform and download all of this information about not just specific users, but those users' friends. And all of that personal data was just available to these app users. And now we're seeing the poison fruit of that with Cambridge Analytica and their use of this data. But how is it possible that they didn't see that coming and didn't take steps to stop it?
Well, the time that they first did what you just described was 2007, when the company was only 3 years old, so 3.5 years old. So it's not shocking that they didn't see it coming then, although they were already close to 50 million users at that time. That was the point at which I was already all over them and starting to really think about writing a book. And I wrote an article about that thing, the so-called first F8 event, which was when they launched the Facebook as a platform and began allowing apps to operate on Facebook. That was in May of 2007. And Mark Zuckerberg at that time was still only like 22, maybe. So I don't think it's that horrible that they didn't see it then. I do think, as I said earlier, that, you know, the pace of evolution of this company and the scale of resources they therefore had available to them as the profits started to flow in, especially after Sheryl Sandberg arrived in 2008 and started building a real, genuine advertising business, which before 2008 they didn't have. I mean, that's another thing worth keeping in mind, by the way. In 2007, when they launched the platform, it really wasn't an ad-based business. It was still basically a venture-funded, loss-leading startup that wasn't that concerned with profit. And in this sense, you've got to give Sheryl Sandberg certainly a tremendous amount of credit with qualifications, but very much credit for having built what is the most profitable business in some ways in the history of the planet. And she arrived in maybe March of 2008, exactly 10 years ago, almost to the day. And she created this ad colossus, which was an unbelievable success.
I have a question about the whole app phenomena. And in reading some, I think, of what you've written and others have written, that Zuckerberg was very excited early on about keeping the platform open to app developers and letting them plug in. I mean, that is not a big piece of revenue or any kind of the revenue of Facebook. Like, why did they even do that? What was the point of doing that when they had this beautiful business model of all these people signing up and giving up their data and then being able to sell that to advertisers? Why did they ever even mess around with Farmville and app developers in general?
Well, that's pretty easy to answer because it's all about, you know, getting page views. And you know, every time you use an app in Facebook and somebody, you know, hits refresh or takes an action, it creates another page view that is another opportunity for Facebook to, at a minimum, gather additional data about you and in many instances to show you an ad. And so, you know, they have been obsessed from the early days in being a platform that really captured people's time and attention. And the apps have been an indispensable tool for achieving that. So that's the simple answer. Another thing about apps you have to remember, Zuckerberg himself is a geeky programmer guy. Apps are his stock and trade. He loves that stuff. You know, that's his, swear? I mean, he loves that shit. That's the stuff he does. He's a totally geeky, app-loving nerd.
Yeah, well, clearly. I mean, and let's, you mentioned, you brought up Sheryl Sandberg, and obviously she's of great interest to people in Washington and politics, having come out of the Treasury Department and then gone on to great fame and fortune at Facebook. Now, there's a lot of criticism directed both at her and at Mark Zuckerberg over recent days for being very slow in responding to this latest crisis over Cambridge Analytica and their accessing of the data and use of the data. It took them, I think, close to a week to come out and speak about this. What was your takeaway from how slow this process was of responding?
Well, first of all, it was a great embarrassment. The criticism they've received for it is completely justified. There's no excuse. A lot of their defenders and many people internally still say it was for good reason. They were trying to figure out what really happened. The reality is, I think the delay was caused by significant internal dissension that really is a consequence of poor management and lines of authority. And Zuckerberg was confused, I would suspect, since he's the only decision maker who matters, because he was getting a lot of conflicting points of view on what should be done. And let's face it, he's still only 33 years old, so he doesn't have a lot of experience. Any CEO will tell you that 5 days, which is how long it was way too long to wait before they made any kind of substantial public response. In fact, they made a number of fitful early things like posting tweets that they then took down, et cetera, et cetera. They were so inept. My own opinion, and I've heard this on some good authority, is that there really are two fundamental camps inside the company, the product people led by Zuckerberg and the ad people and policy people that all report through to Sheryl Sandberg. And on the product side, as I understand it, the general view in the last week or so has been, this is a product problem. We can fix it, but we have to fix it. We have to tell the world we will fix it. We know how to fix it more or less, or we think we could. Let's just say we made a mistake. We're not going to do it again because we're going to fix it as a product problem. Whereas the other side of the house, more the Sheryl side, from what I understand, and of course they're being so opaque, nobody knows, but was basically arguing this is a press problem. This is an image problem. It will blow over. We got a stone wall. We're good people. You know, we'll get it right. We don't have to admit that we made a mistake, that we allowed the democracy, the infringement on democracy the reality is Facebook is threatening global democracy.
Yes. Well, we're going to get into that.
Liberal democracy on a global scale. And think of it. If you were either Mark or Sheryl, how hard it would be for you to own that and admit it to yourself when you believe that what you've created is an incredible gift to the world that allows the world to be more open and connected and to build community and, you know, small businesses to grow, you know, leaps and bounds by targeting their audience and blah, blah, blah. They think all that stuff and they're not wrong. The problem is it blinds them to the reality of the negatives.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty heavy realization to try to come to if you're Mark Zuckerberg or Sheryl Sandberg, that this thing that you've created is such a colossus that it does have the forces for good that you're talking about, but putting the data in the wrong hands, it can be used to completely manipulate the psyche of an entire country and drive an election result. I mean, when you step back and think about that, there must be some dark nights of the soul that go on for the two of them and perhaps others in the company when they have to think about what they may have wrought.
I do think that issues of the survival of democracy that Facebook seems to be putting in jeopardy and has actually impaired in a number of countries that we can point to with detailed evidence is a strong counter argument. But you know what, interestingly, except for a few little things that Zuckerberg said in the New York Times interview he did, they have never, either one of them, Zuckerberg or Sandberg, publicly addressed the issue of the fact that people like Duterte in the Philippines, the generals that run Myanmar, Erdogan, Putin, use propaganda inside Facebook to control their people. They say they're opposed to fake news, but in every undemocratic country in the world, every despot uses Facebook to distribute fake news, in many cases by the government itself. Facebook does not have a policy response for that, and nobody's held their feet to the fire about it. It's something I'm speaking about more and more because I feel very passionately that it's a crisis. But, you know, they have to have the consent of these leaders and these governments to operate their service. So they're deeply conflicted when it comes to coming down on the generals in Myanmar, for example. And it's also complicated because the people in Myanmar who are their content oversight people are citizens of the country who operate inside Myanmar, who if they really were to, you know, stop the government, they would probably go to jail and maybe have worse things happen to them. This is really problematic and complicated when you're running a global service.
Yeah, it gets into my next question, because there are such specific global problems that they face and countries that you mentioned where Facebook is used to undermine any type of democracy. And
wait, could I just quickly say point I just made is a way bigger scandal than Cambridge Analytica,
which is way bigger. Well, let's talk quickly about a couple of the things that have come up in the wake of the Cambridge Analytica hack. And one of them is that Facebook has said they're going to ensure that that data will be deleted. But can they really do that? Can they really be sure that it's been deleted? And that would apply to, you know, all of the other app developers that that got this data. I mean, they can't possibly know who has it and whether they've actually deleted it. Is that right?
Well, you said it. I didn't. I mean, as long as USB sticks exist, they can't guarantee anything. Nobody can guarantee. Once data has been taken, you never really know who has it. And even if the data is what they call watermarked, so that it's possible to identify where it came from, that doesn't mean that we know where it might exist. It might mean we could identify if we ever were to find it on, you know, one of the umpteen USB sticks or hard drives or cloud services that it could possibly reside in. But the answer is a fundamental, unequivocal no, that it could not be determined with certainty, and which is, you know, just obvious. But and that makes some of the things Facebook has said somewhat sound a little disingenuous in reality. And especially now that they're talking about auditing what could be many thousands of apps to try to see what happened to the data. I mean, it's not like they can really follow they don't have gumshoes that are going to, like, you know, do forensics on everybody that's ever touched the keyboard on every computer that's ever had data from Facebook inside it. That's just not practical.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that massive audit that they promised to do, and Zuckerberg said, I'm not sure there are enough auditors on the planet to allow us to do it. But I mean, what does that even look like? And how could they possibly tell us that there are no other Cambridge Analyticas out there? I feel like they really can't.
Well, in a sense, it probably isn't as much about actually determining what has happened to all the data over time as it is just like any regulatory, you know, coming down hard. It's to scare people into future compliance and make sure that if they have it, don't misuse it, because we're going to, you know, call you on it from here going forward. So, yes, they'll do some very expensive and flashy investigative process, and it's not a bad thing. They can afford it with their eyes. You know, they could afford it not even you know, see the thickness of their wallet diminish. But I think it's mostly putting their all their partners on notice that they're taking a fundamentally different attitude, which is good. That's one of the positive consequences of the whole chain of events. But no, the reality is they can't know. But the question is, what are their rules now exactly? Why are their privacy controls so difficult for people to understand and to manipulate? You know, exactly where is the data held now, and what do partners get access to? And, you know, how, I mean, I still think the ultimate question ends up being, how much are they going to be willing to spend and reduce their profits in order to do the right thing in a whole raft of areas that are pretty opaque to even to experts and completely invisible to ordinary users? And it's all doubly complicated by the fact that Facebook's business model is dependent on extremely rich data about users being available for them to use to enable advertisers to target. So they have to be very careful that none of the actions they take significantly reduce the quantity of the data they hold.
Indeed. David Kirkpatrick, author of The Facebook Effect, you've been super kind with your time. I want to ask you one last question, and that is to envision what I'm sure is going to happen. Mark Zuckerberg called to Washington to testify. Talk to me about what do you think that will look like? How will Zuckerberg do? And what are, say, the top two or three questions that you think he'll be asked and needs to answer?
Well, it'll be such a media circus, and he's so uncomfortable in answering questions in public to begin with, that it's going to be incredibly, excruciatingly painful for him. But I think you're right, it can't be avoided. He will get the world's most expensive PR advice. Unfortunately, if it's anything like the PR advice he's been getting in the last few weeks, it may not help him that much. He'll be asked, how can he guarantee that this kind of problem isn't going to become chronic? I think he'll be asked, he should be asked, you know, what are some regulatory or oversight models that might possibly work on a more macro scale? What would be a more systemic way to think about government partnering with Facebook and other net giants, but in general with tech companies, as data becomes the currency of modern society? What does he think would be a possible way? And how much is he willing to work with government? I think that's a key question that he has to be asked, especially now that he's opened himself to it in the last few days. I think he should be asked about the misuse of Facebook by anti-democratic forces on a global scale, the use of Facebook for propaganda by despotic governments, and how we can ensure that that doesn't happen. In effect, you could argue right now Facebook is undermining the foreign policy of the United States by enabling misbehavior by a lot of countries whose governments we have tried for decades to keep in check. And it's an American service, so I think he owes Congress answers on that. I suspect that most of the questions that even I just mentioned will not get asked, because sadly we have a Congress that isn't very technologically literate either. I hope Mark Warner is one of the people that gets to ask him questions, because he's one of the very few people in Congress that actually has an idea of what some of the right questions are. But I'm not very optimistic. I think it would be healthy for him to take questions in public from anybody. But, you know, he hasn't taken questions in public from anyone in the last 2.5 years, except from me on the stage at Techonomy 2 days after the election, when he said it's a crazy idea that fake news on Facebook affected the election. So he doesn't have the best track record of speaking in public where he has no control over the questions.
It's going to be incredibly fascinating to watch when it happens. David Kirkpatrick, author of The Facebook Effect. I urge everyone to go out and get it and read it. David, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us at Politico Money.
Thanks so much for having a great conversation.
Next, we'll talk regulation with Politico's Nancy Scola. But first, a word from our sponsor.
A message from Morgan Stanley. Has alternative energy gone mainstream? Alternative energy, solar power investment, and utilities are taking what was once on the fringes of science as recently as 30 years ago and turning it into the new normal. Biosphere 2, a massive science facility tucked away in the desert foothills of the Santa Catalina Mountains, was built for controversial space exploration experiments. Now it functions as a mainstream research facility studying the potential for farming beneath solar panels, a technique that's already applicable for future colonies on Mars. Morgan Stanley's podcast discusses where the renewable energy industry has been, its transformations over the past few decades, and what this means for investors in renewable energy technology as well as everyday consumers. Hear the full podcast at morganstanley.com/podcast and subscribe to the Morgan Stanley Ideas podcast. Morgan Stanley & Co., LLC, member SIPC.
Okay, we're joined by Politico's Nancy Scola, who's done amazing work covering the Facebook story.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Let's talk about risks to Facebook from the regulatory world. There's obviously talk that Facebook could face significant new regulations, and even Mark Zuckerberg himself said in one of his many interviews recently that he's not sure that Facebook shouldn't be more regulated. What are the biggest threats? Like, what regulation could come out of Washington or Europe or the UK or whoever else is looking into Facebook? What are the biggest threats from regulation to the company?
Yeah, so the range of regulation on the table, it starts with some pretty small things. The one that's gotten the most traction, and that's only relative because it hasn't gotten much traction at all, but the thing that's gotten most traction in terms of regulating Facebook so far has been a bill in the House and Senate to require more transparency around political ads that run on the site. So right now, you don't have to disclose, unlike on television or in the newspaper, disclose who's paying for an ad. So the idea would be that on political ads, you have a little disclaimer saying who paid for it, and then going a step further, saying who that ad was targeted to and how much money was put behind that ad. So that's sort of a small bore thing that hasn't gotten much traction, as I mentioned, only a couple sponsors in the House and Senate. And then the sort of on the other end of the scale would be pretty big antitrust enforcement against Facebook. So breaking up the company into constituent parts. So that would probably be, sort of main Facebook and then their Messenger product, Instagram, which is a Facebook product, and WhatsApp, which is a Facebook product, break those apart. And then the latest suggestion that's sort of circulating in Washington is the idea of peeling off their ad network, which is core to their business, but it's also where a lot of the problems for Facebook pop up. So the idea would be separate that out, get some new oversight over that product in particular.
And that is obviously the great generator of Facebook's revenue. Almost all of its revenue comes from advertising. It feels like peeling that out in some way might be the biggest threat to the company, although I'm not clear on how that would work exactly.
No, you could imagine that's not something Facebook wants to sort of give away or separate from sort of their core product. And you mentioned sort of the idea of the most serious threats. Another one for Facebook is having to lift the hood and do something that in Europe they call algorithmic transparency, which is actually just describing how when they come up with what appears on users' newsfeed, having to describe how that's been targeted to folks, they're really reluctant to do that. Tech companies in general are really reluctant to reveal sort of their secret sauce that drive their sites. That is getting traction in Europe. It's sort of been, bandied about a little bit in Washington, but hasn't gotten too far yet.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder in this kind of age of Trump-dominated news that we live in, a news cycle that is incredibly short before we move on to the next story. It feels like to me, to some degree, Facebook and Sheryl Sandberg has been banking on the idea that everyone will move on from this and it won't be as bad as it seems. Do you think that's a possibility that Facebook can just sort of ride out the Cambridge Analytica thing and hope everyone just moves on?
I think if I were them, I wouldn't bet on it. I think it's had amazing staying power so far. And I think what we're seeing is this latest scandal with Cambridge Analytica tapped into some real simmering resentments amongst users who are sort of a little bit annoyed already with how their data was being used by the company. And then amongst regulators, I think, you see on Capitol Hill, in Europe in particular, there's a lot of anger at the company that's been sort of simmering for a while. And they are just starting to get the sort of momentum from the public to do something about it. So I don't think it's going away anytime soon. Again, in Europe, they've actually gone pretty far. They have a new privacy set of rules that's going into effect in May that if Facebook had done what they had done back in 2015 with Cambridge Analytica, if they'd done it, if they do it this June, they're liable for a fine of up to 4% of their annual global revenue, which even for Facebook, isn't nothing.
No.
So I think that the regulators are sort of getting a little bit of a taste for regulating some of these tech companies. We saw in Congress last week, they passed a law, not just applying to Facebook, but applying to some of these online platforms in general, that would hold them more liable for what appears on their platforms that is just targeted at sex trafficking content. But it mm-hmm. was sort of the first time that U.S. lawmakers kind of got experience with regulating Facebook and the world not, excuse me, regulating these technology companies and the world not ending. So if I were those two executives, I wouldn't bet on this going away anytime soon.
And I mean, obviously, it's critically important at a Silicon Valley company like Facebook to retain talent. I think a lot of people miss in this story that it's a very important internal dilemma for Facebook, that they can't really risk alienating people and losing people. What are the risks here to Facebook?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, Silicon Valley companies listen to their employees much more than companies in other industries tend to. And a big part of that is the recruitment challenge. They need good engineers to keep their products up and running, and there's an intense competition for those engineers. So a big part of what Facebook's outreach has been, not even just on the Cambridge Analytica situation, but over the investigations into Russia's possible meddling in the U.S. election using this platform, a big part of their outreach has been internal, to sort of calm the waters amongst their 25,000 employees so that they don't start get up and start bolting for the doors.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I'll just ask you one more question and let you go, because I know you got a little work to do, and that is the Delete Facebook campaign. Does Facebook employees internally, do they worry about that, or do they think that this is a passing phenomena? I mean, I see people on Facebook talking about it, but not actually doing it. And the question is, where does everybody go if they're not connected on Facebook? How big a risk is it to them?
I think it's something they're certainly paying attention to. I think, Uber went through this, and that was sort of when folks talked about deleting Uber. And I think it rattled the company, and a lot of folks shifted to Lyft. As you mentioned, there's not a ton of alternatives to Facebook, but there are some. I mean, I think people, could go to Instagram, which, while it's a Facebook property, is not their core business. So I think it does worry them a bit. I think it's important to keep in mind, though, that right now this scandal is largely in the U.S., U.K., and the rest of Europe. But Facebook has 2 billion users around the world. In some places of the world, Facebook is the internet. That's how people, when they think of the internet, they think of Facebook. So I think they'll still have quite a few users, even if the people, in the United States and the UK and Europe get upset about this. But they're not loving seeing the traction that the Delete Facebook campaign is getting.
I wouldn't imagine. And that's a great thought to leave it on. In some parts of the world, Facebook is the internet. That's a pretty impressive thing. Nancy Scola, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate your insight.
Thank you, Ben.
All right, that's a wrap for our Facebook episode. Remember, if you have any questions you'd like me to answer on the podcast, tweet at me with the hashtag AskBenAnything. My handle on Twitter is @MorningMoneyBen. And do me a solid, subscribe to Politico Money, rate us, and write a written review. Thanks, as always, to my producer, Bridget Mulcahy. Our executive producer is Dave Shaw, and we'll talk to you next week.